The complicated story surrounding the Boston Marathon bombings is still unraveling, and we're learning more today about part of the drama that played out right in our own backyard late last Thursday night into early Friday morning. Authorities say the Tsarnaev brothers, Tamerlan and Jahar, had already killed MIT police officer Sean Collier when they carjacked a young Chinese entrepreneur who was driving a brand new Mercedes. That young man described to Boston Globe reporter Eric Moskowitz what happened over the harrowing next 90 minutes. Eric told Bob Oakes, who hosts Morning Edition on our home station WBUR, the story.
The carjacking victim is a guy who goes by Danny in the U.S. He's 26. He's from China. He's a Northeastern grad. And he's driving, got a text message, and believe it or not, pulled over to the side of the road to reply rather than do it behind the wheel. And while he was stopped, the two brothers involved in the Boston Marathon bombing slammed right behind him and pulled up. And the older brother got out, tapped on the window. He couldn't quite make out what he was saying, so Danny rolled down the window. The older brother reached in, opened the door, got in, flashed the gun, and the carjacking began.
And this began what was a 90-minute odyssey. I don't think I knew it lasted that long.
Yeah, you know, part of it, I think, was a little bit of the fog of war. When the initial details came out from the state police last Friday and the immediate aftermath, they made it seem as if the carjacking had happened between 10:29 and 10:31 in Cambridge, which didn't quite explain why it would be another 2 hours until the chase and the shootout. And we come to find out that it's actually a little bit different story. Danny gets carjacked in Brighton just before 11. They take him on a sort of a zigzagging trek. They loop around Brighton, cross the river into Watertown. They stop in Watertown, load heavy objects that he thinks are luggage, but that, you know, we believe turn out to be the IEDs, into his car. They drive around some more. And it seems like their plan, as they tell him and as they talk in a foreign language, but he picks up Manhattan, is to go to New York. And instead, he's able to escape because the car doesn't have enough gas. And they pull into the gas station in Cambridge, and he managed to seize an opportunity and get out.
Did Danny feel like during that 90-minute drive that the brothers knew where they were going at that moment beyond the ultimate goal of apparently taking their bombs to New York City?
I don't believe so. I mean, Danny's trying to read between the lines. And, you know, what the scene played out, as he described it, is a mix of the older brother trying to instill fear in him between flashing the gun and, you know, barking commands like, don't be stupid, we'll kill you. The very first thing he said to him after, you know, telling him it was a robbery was that, you know, do you know the Boston Marathon bombings? We're the guys who did that, and we just killed the cop in Cambridge. The younger brother was a little bit, Danny felt like he was sort of a goofier student. As they're driving around, there's a lot of silence and a lot of zigzagging, and they actually go back to Watertown a couple times. At one point, as best Danny can tell, it's only to get some music to play in the car. I think he does think if he'd had gas, they would have gone straight to New York, but they stop at a gas station on Route 20. It's closed. They go to a gas station that's cash only, which leaves one of the brothers to go into the store. And Danny feels like he has an opportunity when the older brother puts down his gun to fiddle with the GPS.
And he jumps out of the car and runs into the gas station and hides in a storeroom.
He does. He does.
When the police showed up, did they believe his story?
I have no reason to doubt that they did. They certainly took it quickly. I mean, they asked him to calm down over the phone and then in person. And at first, there were four officers dealing with him. And, you know, they took his statement there. They figured out pretty quickly they could track the car via his phone and via Mercedes-Benz satellite system. And then while this is happening, suddenly the car chase is going on and it's becoming a shootout all the way to Watertown. And so I think there was a little bit, obviously, of urgency on the part of the police. But they brought Danny first to, I believe, the Cambridge police station. Then they took him out into the field, apparently to identify some suspects who were not the younger brother. And then they brought him to, among other places, the state police barracks in Brighton, and he spent 15 hours with them giving statements to local police, state police, FBI, you know, telling them everything, a lot of which informed some of the federal filings that we've seen already, but many more details come out in Danny's story.
Let me ask you one last question, if I might, Eric. Several times in your story this morning in the Boston Globe, you say that Danny felt like he was going to die, that this carjacking would mean the end of his life. Does he feel lucky to have survived?
He feels very lucky to have survived. And if you can believe it or not, he did not talk to his parents about this in China over Skype until yesterday. He told his dad not to tell his mom because he didn't want her to worry, and that unless his name gets out, she shouldn't have to worry about it.
That's WBUR's Bob Oakes speaking with Eric Moskowitz of the Boston Globe. The two suspects then ended up in Watertown, Massachusetts. By that point, police were looking for the carjacked Mercedes. Now, somehow a second car ends up in the story. Remember, exactly how this unfolded is still being pieced together by investigators. And that's where another Globe reporter picks up the story. Joining us now is Kevin Cullen. And Kevin, the suspects at this point had a stolen Mercedes SUV and allegedly some explosives and other firearms. What happened next?
Well, there was a young cop named Joe Reynolds from Watertown who was on patrol. The cops knew because the carjacking victim had told them that his cell phone was in there. So the cops had a general idea. They were pinging the cell phone, and they had a general location. So Joe, like every other cop in eastern Massachusetts, was looking for this car. And he sees it, so he calls in the dispatch. He goes, "I've made contact. I can see them. I can see them." And the dispatcher's response, "Do not engage. Wait for backup." And that was fine with Joe. So he just pulled, he was following them, and the two cars pull over. And at this point, Joe didn't know it, but he was interrupting their what they were doing was trying to move the explosive devices they had in one car to the stolen SUV. And at that point, when they get out of the vehicle, they see Joe's cruiser, and they just open up on him. And Joe put the cruiser into reverse and just backed up as fast as he could. And just at that point, his first backup, it's a Sergeant Johnny McClellan, who, I'll tell you, if you want anybody in a firefight with you, you want Johnny McClellan. And he pulls up, and they both get out of their vehicles, and they start firing back, returning fire. At the same time, there's a cop, Timmy Menton, who just got off a detail, but he heard it over his radio. So he races to the scene. So he's coming down the other way, and they see him coming. So they turn and they fire at Timmy. And one of the rounds went right through his windshield, narrowly missed him.
And Kevin, let me just jump in here. Basically, all of a sudden, all these cops from different towns and different, and basically departments start to respond. One of the police, you write, actually did this really ingenious thing with his cop car. Tell us about that.
Well, what he did is he jumped out and left the car in neutral, but let it keep rolling. And so as the car, approached the suspects, that drew their fire. And the way I put it in my column today, every bullet that went into that empty car was one less bullet that could be used on a cop. The other thing that happened is one of the responders was Jeff. He's a sergeant in Watertown. His name is Jeff Puglisi. So Jeff starts running through yards, and he actually comes up on the side. So Tamerlan is out there shooting at the cop.
This is the older brother.
Yeah, that's the older brother, Tamerlan, and he's out there firing, standing right there in the street, and Jeff gets the drop on him because he comes up from the side through the backyards. You know, it's not confirmed yet because the autopsy results in, but everybody I know that was on the scene said Jeff put at least a couple into him, and that brought him down. Jeff runs towards the suspect, and another Boston police officer helps him. They're cuffing him, but they had lost sight of the younger brother. As they're cuffing Tamerlan, they realize here comes the other car. The kid's gunning the engine. They turn and they see the car coming at them. And it's like a scene out of a movie. It looks like he's trying to run the cops over, but his brother's with them. And so they dive one. Jeff dives one way. The Boston cop dives the other way. And the younger brother drives right over his older brother and actually drags his body a distance. And then the body comes flying out the back of the undercarriage, and the kid drives off. So you got a suspect down, but you also have, this is when it gets really crazy. Then you start hearing people yelling, "Officer down, officer hit."
Right. This is a transit cop named Richard Donahue who ended up losing most of his blood when major vessels in his thigh were severed by a bullet. Now, do investigators know yet, Kevin, where that gunshot came from?
They don't know. Because the bullet is still in Dick's thigh, it's in such a tender spot. It severed his femoral artery. That's why he bled so badly. And if not for the heroic actions of all the officers that converged on him, he would have died there. In fact, he probably was legally dead because there was no pulse, there was no heartbeat, and he had lost such blood.
So Richard Donahue is actually doing much better now in the hospital. Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older brother, ends up dying in a hospital that night. And then your account takes us to the end of the chase where the younger Tsarnaev brother, Jakar, is found hiding in a boat in Watertown. And there was some symbolism to which cops got to put the cuffs on him.
Yeah, the police opened fire on the boat. Still unclear why. I think one officer thought there was a threat. it looks like the suspect was unarmed. But when they get out there, when he finally climbs out of the boat, Billy Evans is a superintendent for the Boston Police. And so Billy jumped forward and said, "Hold your fire, hold your fire." They wanted him alive. And so when the kid came out of the boat, they had to cuff him. And Billy Evans turned to a couple of MBTA police SWAT guys because, you know,
These are the transit guys.
Transit cops, and they were comrades of Dick Donahue. And Billy said, he hurt your guy, cuff him. And Kenny Tran and Jeff Campbell stepped forward, and they put the handcuffs on him. And as I said in my column, they did it for their buddy Dick Donahue, and they did it for all of us.
That's Boston Globe columnist Kevin Cullen. Kevin, thanks very much.
Thank you.